There are 24 hours in a day. One third of the day is spent in bed. Now, why not be in the most comfortable you can get? Layla mattresses are more than just a foam mattress. They are copper infused and flippable. That's right, flippable. If you like a harder mattress, use one side. If you like a softer mattress, flip it over and voila. And the great thing about Layla is getting to try it out for 120 nights. That's right, 4 months. And if you decide that you don't like the mattress, Layla will pick up the cost of shipping it back and give you a full refund. Layla also offers bamboo sheets, weighted blankets, and memory foam pillows. And if you act soon, you can take advantage of their spring sale. $150 off a mattress and 2 free pillows. That's a $300 value. Plus, they are offering $30 to $50 off accessories. If you would like to take advantage of this great deal, simply follow the link in the show notes to let them know we sent you and to help support the show. Layla Sleep, thoughtfully designed for the most cool, clean, comfortable sleep imaginable. Hey guys, what's up? Welcome to another edition of Everyone Has a Story. I am your host, Nate Wade, coming to you straight from the dungeon as always. This week we've got Craig Lukey on the program. He is a retired firefighter that has some amazing stories. He was also part of an elite first responder team that responded to some of this nation's most tragic disasters that we've had, whether it be hurricanes or the Oklahoma City bombing. So he's got a fantastic story. Please stay tuned and listen to that. You won't regret it. We've started a new thing here at Everyone Has a Story last week. We have started making our podcast available on YouTube. So if you like to watch a podcast as opposed to listen to the podcast, you can do so on YouTube. You can find us at Everyone Has a Story there on YouTube. And it depends. If it was recorded audio only, you'll just see a nice little slideshow and maybe a little thing that just kind of bounces around and says, hey, look, this person's talking. If it was an actual video recording, we'll have a video of the person that I was talking to there on the video. So don't hesitate. Go subscribe now to the YouTube channel, Everyone Has a Story. Love to have you there. Please, 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 please. I want to become the next PewDiePie, right? Or T-Series, or whoever's running the race or winning the race this week on has the most subscribers. Okay, I will never have over 1 million subscribers. Who am I kidding? But it would be kind of fun to have a few subscribers on YouTube. So if you like to watch YouTube and you would find it a little bit more convenient to listen to the podcast there, then head on over to YouTube and do so. So let's talk a little bit about Buzzsprout, though, right? That's where I host my podcast, the audio portion of the podcast. It is so stinking easy. And if you've ever thought about doing a podcast, right now is the best time to do it, right? You got plenty of times on your hands. If you're not one of those essential employees, that's kind of a dumb word. If you're not one of those people that, you know, are lucky enough to work, let's just say that, outside of the home or wherever, then why not start a podcast? Fantastic time to do so. And Buzzsprout is the best place to do it. They offer some of the most amazing things to help you get going on that. You can even have a website straight through Buzzsprout, but they've got great analytics, easy to do, cheap prices to subscribe, different tiers depending on how much of footage you want to put out, how many hours that you want to dedicate every month to doing your podcast. So head on over to the show notes right now and click on the link there. You'll find that'll hook you up to Buzzsprout and help Buzzsprout know that you're listening to this podcast. And if you do that as soon as possible, they will send you a free $20 Amazon gift card to help you get started for your podcast basics. If you need to help with some money for microphones or a mixing board or some of those other fancy things you need to get podcast going, then this is the best time to do it. Head on over to the show notes, click on that link for Buzzsprout, and start your podcasting adventure today. All right, well, three things. I want to talk about a couple things. You know, there's so much crazy news out there. A lot of it is sad. Some of it's depressing. Some of it's scary. Some people are screaming and complaining that the economy is shut down. Some people are screaming and complaining because people are screaming and complaining that the economy shut down. So it's all this crazy stuff. Everybody's going back and forth. Everything's politicized. It doesn't matter. A virus has now been politicized. Go figure. I mean, if somebody can find a way to politicize something, they're going to do it. And they just did it with this virus. So having said that, let's talk about something that's happy. So three things that are making me happy this week. The first one is going to be that Fiona Apple. I don't know how many of y'all know who Fiona Apple is. She's been around for like 25 years, but in that 25 years, she's only released like 5 albums. It's just crazy how many years go by between albums. And this last time, 8 years. She has not released an album since 2012, but she is back with a brand new album. And I just listened to it yesterday for the first time, and it is amazing. It is divine. It is so good. So if you like Fiona Apple, if you remember who Fiona Apple is, then go check out that song. It's just amazing. Oh, so good. Second thing that is making me happy is I watched the Detective Pikachu movie just a couple of days ago. Now, look, I'm not a big Pokemon fan. My kids are. I mean, they were in Dreamland. In fact, my one son, who is completely into Pokemon, just thought it was the best thing he'd ever seen. He's like, look at that one and that one and that one. He's telling all the names of the Pokemon monsters, and I'm just like, okay, whatever. But it was a good story. It was really good. And Ryan Reynolds, come on. Ryan Reynolds as Pikachu is fantastic. So if you want a great movie that's kid-friendly, there's a little crass humor, but it's mostly kid-friendly, then go check out Detective Pikachu. You can actually watch that for free right now because HBO has a free thing going on because of this coronavirus, giving you a little bit of extra stuff to binge right there in the HBO app. So go check that out. And the last thing that is making me happy right now is the book that I'm reading by a person by the name of Brenda Baumgartner Stanley. You can listen to her story actually back a few episodes ago there on a on this very podcast. How does that sound? But right now I'm reading one of her books, and it's a fantastic book. Thoroughly enjoyed it, and I honestly I can't remember the name of it, the name of the book right now. So let me just click on Amazon.com right now. We'll go to Brenda Stanley right here. Brenda Stanley. I don't know why I can't remember it. It's a Treasure. Oh my goodness. It's a good book, but I can't remember. Oh, The Treasure of Cedar Creek, of course. It's a fantastic book. Check it out if you have not checked it out. You can get it on Kindle right now for $3.99. Isn't that amazing? I mean, come on, that's a good price, right? Or if you'd rather have that nice paperback feel, you know, like a lot of us do. Look, I have Kindle books, but I like that paperback feel. You can get that too on Amazon for $18.95 for the paperback. It is a great book. Check it out. Brenda Baumgartner Stanley and her book, The Treasure of Cedar Creek. And if you want to know her story, then you can go back, check out the archives of Everyone Has a Story and listen to Brenda's story. She's got a fantastic story. She is a great, great lady. So there we have it. Craig Lukey's on the show this week, and you're going to love it. I'm telling you, like I said, he was a firefighter. He's been a firefighter since he was about 25 years old, I believe he said. And then he was one of the original members of this elite response team that responded to natural disasters and things like that over the course of the past, I think, 15, 20 years. More than that, yeah, because he responded to the World Trade Center bombing. He's also responded to Hurricane Katrina and things like that. So just an amazing, fascinating story. And he also has a podcast that you guys are going to need to check out. And I will have more details about that podcast after you listen to Craig talk about his life. So without any further ado, except for the messages, we'll have to have some advertisement. You know, we got to pay for this thing, right? We got to. All right. Right after the advertisements and a promo for a few awesome podcasts, we'll get right into the story of Craig Lukey on Everyone Has a Story.
The Be Engaged and Inspired Podcast, a new podcast with your hosts, Kia and DJ Sam, with nearly 60 years of wedding and event planning experience. Every Wednesday, a new episode will help you navigate the tricky waters of planning a wedding or special event. Most importantly, leaving you feeling inspired. Follow us on the Be Engaged and Inspired Podcast Facebook group page. Listen now to the Be Engaged and Inspired Podcast on Apple Podcast or Google Play. The Be Engaged and Inspired podcast is proud to be part of the Indie Blast podcast network.
Well, I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area on the Maryland side, Montgomery County, which is on the north side of the Capitol Beltway, which everyone's heard of that mm-hmm. for Washington, D.C. There's a beltway that goes around and it goes through Virginia and Maryland. Went to school in public schools and then some private schools as well. And as I got older, got married and everything, moved up north into Frederick, Maryland, which is just on the outside edge of the Washington, D.C. area. So I'm mm-hmm. equal distance between Baltimore and Washington now. So okay. It's a great area, born and raised in Maryland. And I love the Mid-Atlantic region.
Do you? You like the East Coast then, that area?
Yeah, I think the way Maryland is in Northern Virginia and in Washington, D.C., we have everything from the beaches to the bay to the mountains. Mm-hmm. It's like little America here, and it's very green. I travel out to Vegas and Arizona, but it seems brown to me. I'm not used to that. Of course, they come out here, and they're surprised how green it is. So it's kind of hit or miss either way. But I really do love the Mid-Atlantic region.
Well, I totally agree. I mean, I'm from Idaho. And of course, we're right smack dab in the middle of the Rocky Mountains. And so we've got, you know, that majestic scenery and whatnot. But, you know, we still have a big old desert right here in the state of Idaho, the Snake River Plains that run through here. So there's plenty of sagebrush to go around. And so for my business, I travel quite a bit. And I went back east for the first time ever in my life a couple of years ago. I had to go up to Massachusetts and then travel up through Maine and then back down to New York and whatever. And I was totally amazed at how green it was and how thick the trees were over there. It was just mind-boggling to me because it's not that way around here at all.
And it is crowded here from Maryland north, because it is the original United States.
Sure.
There's
sure.
13 colonies. So if you want to build a road, you have to tear something down. It's that crowded. So the traffic is definitely here. So if you don't mind traffic,
D.C.
Is the place to be. So.
I bet. You know, I didn't make it down that far south, but Boston was enough traffic for me. They had some roundabout circles that I went through that just was like, okay, what in the hell? Heck is this? I didn't totally understand what was going on at all. So
completely different than the West Coast.
Yeah, obviously. That's for sure. So once you got out of high school, then did you go to college or what'd you pursue?
Yeah, I went to high school, private school in Hagerstown, Maryland, but then went to college and I wanted to be a fire protection engineer. But while in high school, there was an opportunity as soon as you turned 16 to become a volunteer firefighter. Mm-hmm. And with it, my age of 57, everybody at that age watched this TV show called Emergency.
Sure.
And it was around, you know, in the 70s and Johnny Gage and Roy DeSoto. So a lot of us wanted to be in the fire department because of that one TV show. I always wanted to do it. I was always interested. You know, I got pictures of fire trucks for Christmas as a kid and everything. And just that's all I wanted to do. And when I found out you could be a firefighter in high school and take classes and get high school credits, I jumped right on that.
Okay.
So while I was in college doing fire protection engineering, I was applying for fire departments. Mm-hmm. And when one of them called and said, hey, we want to hire you, you pretty much drop your college and go. You can't turn it down.
Yeah.
So I pretty much never finished my fire protection engineering. Went through the whole thing, the whole recruit school and everything, and did my 28 years in Northern Virginia in Fairfax County.
Oh, wow. So, so fire protection engineering is what you studied in college. I've never heard of such a degree. What would you do with a degree like that if you would have finished up in that degree?
So when you're in an office building and you look up and no one ever looks at this stuff, but it's there.
Yeah.
Those little sprinkler heads that are everywhere.
Yeah.
The exit signs, the width of the doors, the exits for you to get out of the building if there's a fire. All that stuff to keep you alive, to get you out and protect your path on the way out and protect the building. That's what that does. All those pipes and everything and the fire department connections and all that.
So, I mean, when you're talking about you're saying engineering, you would have been technically an engineer and you would have been structurally making these buildings fire safe for people.
Yes, you go through the blueprints, you make sure all the pipes are correct for the number of people and the type of occupancy. There's rules, whether it's a restaurant, if it's a school, if it's a hospital, everything is completely different. And the books, the fire code books are amazing. They're so thick. No one can ever remember all these things. They're always looking everything up. It's really complicated. Uh-huh. It sounds like it would be simple, but you know, you have to put the sprinklers in the right location to get the right coverage and all that stuff. It's crazy.
Wow. So, you took the job as a fireman, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so, what year were we talking here when you started being a fireman?
86. Well, I started. What year? 1979 to be a volunteer.
Okay.
At age of six, on my birthday, I got in.
Oh, okay. And so, you were still in high school at that point?
Still in high school. Mm-hmm. And then I was a volunteer up until I got hired in Northern Virginia.
Wow. And so you started your career then just in your mid-20s around that time frame then, eh?
about age 24, a little late bloomer, but you know, it's very difficult to get hired in the fire department. There's so many people that want to, you know, that apply, and you have to go through polygraph, take a test. You have to do interviews, background checks, urine, you know, they check everything, drugs, all that stuff. So, it's a long process. It takes about 1 to 2 years to get in.
Oh, geez. So when you finally got hired on as a fireman, then, was this like your dream job? This is exactly what you wanted to do. You said, I mean, you grew up watching this TV show, and it was when you were younger, what you wanted to do. Did it turn out being what you thought it was going to be?
Dude, I'm a kid. I get paid to be on a big fire truck, full blown. The alarm goes off just like on the TV show. I get on the fire truck. I put all my stuff on.
Yeah.
You're going down the road and you're out there making a difference. People only call 911 when they're at the end of the rope.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're the one to go in there and help change their life and change the course of whatever's happening. So the adrenaline rush of that is just amazing.
So do you remember the first call you ever went on?
Absolutely. Probably not.
Okay.
You know, it sounds like, you know, when you watch, I've never watched that Chicago Fire and all those latest shows. Yeah. It's too much drama. I you know, nobody could sit next to me and watch that show with me because I'll nitpick it. But most of the calls are medical related. Uh-huh. 80-90% are actually medical related or auto accidents. Mm-hmm. There aren't like fires going on like every hour.
Right.
That's not realistic. I mean, in the whole county where I'm at, which is a population now of like, I think 1.3 million now.
In just your county.
There might be a fire every couple of days. Oh, it's not, and it's a huge area that they have. So it's not like, and not all of them are big. It could be one mattress or something like that, or a car. Mm-hmm. It's not what you think. So it's a lot of it's medical, false alarms, fire alarms, stuff like that.
Hmm. Well, so then do you remember like the first big fire you went on? You're like, this is it. This is my fire opportunity.
Oh, there. I had a lot of them when I was a volunteer, actually.
Oh, really? And, okay.
Yeah. So when I was even 16, 17, we had a lot of fires. Mm-hmm. In that region of Western Maryland, it's Hagerstown, Maryland area, near the Appalachian Trail is where it's located. There are a lot of apple orchards and stuff like that. So the fires we would get are a lot of houses. And back in the late 70s, early 80s, people didn't really have a lot of smoke alarms, and a lot of fire safety stuff wasn't really as advanced as it is now, and the education for kids and that sort of thing. So, we had like migrants in small houses where they're just stacked in there. Too many people living in there. It could be 20 or 30 living in this small apple orchard picking house. You know, whether they're illegal, I don't know.
Yeah. But
way too many people for one building. And we would have multiple deaths that way. And that would be my first exposure to people, you know, dying. You're going through a house, you know, with a fire hose and everything. And then you don't realize so after it's over, you've been walking on top of a body that was right there at the door.
Oh, man.
Because everything's just black. You just can't tell.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And well, so when you're in that late teen age thing, it's like, whoa, you know?
Yeah.
So you grow up a little quick.
I was going to say, I bet you it opened up your eyes pretty quickly to that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. It's a little different. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I'm assuming, like you said, a lot of the calls are not for fires, but they're for, you know, emergencies, some other type of medical emergency. I'm assuming you probably responded to car accidents and things like that as well.
We've had some horrific auto accidents, especially in the Washington, D.C. area. There's just so much traffic and everyone's always in a hurry here. Mm-hmm. It's a very high stress, you know, region, you know, figuring the federal government's here and contractors and a lot of headquarters for major corporations are based here. So, yeah, we get a lot of high speed accidents. They're pretty ugly.
Wow. I couldn't imagine. I got a coworker that has been working with us for a few years, and he's actually in the National Guard as a firefighter. And he was, he also did firefighting before he started working with us. And he was telling us some of the stories of some of the car accidents and stuff he responded to. And it's just, it's just, yeah, no thanks. And that's why he finally, you know, stopped working as a full-time firefighter and came to work and working with potatoes like we do now. But he's still involved in the National Guard and does firefighting with that. But yeah, just horrific stories.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, here's one for you. Mm-hmm. We had a recruit firefighter from a local fire department. He wasn't done with school yet, but he was out partying with his other classmates. This is like 2 a.m, heading west on Interstate 66 for people in Northern Virginia that they'd be familiar with that. In the middle of the night, just completely ran into the back of this car, who happened to have a fire captain and his whole family inside that.
Oh, man.
So the odds of that happening, and then the truck went up on top of the vehicle and killed his girls in the back seat. And we got there. I mean, it was just, we're just trying to get this vehicle up on top. And we couldn't understand why the driver of the truck had so many injuries. Mm-hmm. And we put him and I took him to a hospital quickly. Like, well, his truck is okay, but why does he have so many injuries? Turned out that the driver where he lost, you know, the father who lost his kids and his family died in the vehicle. Mm-hmm. He had went and got the spare tire and all that, and was crushing his head, beating the guy up. Oh. And we couldn't put two and two together. Like, why is this guy so messed up? But he ended up going to jail for manslaughter. But yeah, you know, those are the kind of things we run into. It's you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, I bet. Well, in your bio, you were telling me that you had joined an elite international rescue team as well. Do you want to tell me just a little bit about that and what kind of stuff you responded to as part of that team?
So when you join the fire department, when you're, you know, 70s or 80s, you're getting into that, you just think you run medicals and stuff they do on emergency, right?
Sure.
Well, you know, being in the right place at the right time seems to, you know, everyone's has that story.
Yeah.
So Fairfax County is one of two locations in the entire United States, two fire departments that works with the State Department and also FEMA. Under FEMA, there's 28 teams, but the State Department one under OFDA, which is the Office of Foreign Disaster Assistance, in USAID, United States Agency for International Development, they contract with two fire departments in the United States. They renew the contract every 5 years, and they deploy by order of the president around the world for disasters, which are hurricanes, typhoons, terrorist attacks, and mainly earthquakes. Mm-hmm. So our team is an elite team that goes out, and we're all firefighters.
Yeah.
And we have all this equipment that was granted, you know, the federal government pays for it and the county pays for it. And we get deployed out there. So some of the instance that we've gone by under order of the president, been to Iran, BAM, Iran under George Bush for an earthquake there, which pretty much decimated like 80-90% of this city.
That was the first Bush?
I think so. Yeah. I have to go
early 90s,
2005, 2006.
Oh, okay. Okay. George W. Bush. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. George W. Okay. So yeah, it was over Christmas. Uh-huh. So went there, Turkey, Taiwan, Turkey twice, Taiwan, places like that. Even Nairobi, Kenya, when they tried to blow up our U.S. embassy there. Mm-hmm. And when they messed that up, they ended up blowing up the apartment building next door. Oh. So because the federal government here felt bad that we kind of caused it because they were trying to get us, but they ended up hurting the people there. Mm-hmm. They deployed our team there to help look for survivors in that building. Mm-hmm.
When you go into those kind of places, like you said, Kenya and then Iran and some of these places that are politically hostile towards the United States, what kind of how do they respond to you while you're there?
Okay, this is really interesting. And so when we went to Iran, this was over Christmas. And the way the federal government works is a lot of the first string government employees are on vacation, they're away. So the third string government is here. So when the earthquake occurred, Bush was down at his ranch in Texas. Mm-hmm. You know how the president will get on there and say, you know, our thoughts and prayers, if there's anything we offer our assistance.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't think Iran would say yes. No. Well, actually they did this time. So they didn't know what to do. So they decide we're going to send the firefighters over to help the Iranians. Uh-huh. So we ended up getting all the way to Marone, Italy. There's a military base there with a C-5. We actually fly on military aircraft. We take our own vehicles. We take a couple of tractor trailers, some box trucks. We're self-sufficient. We don't need water, food from anybody for 10 days.
Yeah.
You can pop us down anywhere. We're good to go. So we take everything. So we got there, and then they decide, well, we don't want to send everybody in there. We're only going to send, I think it was 15 of us. So I ended up being part of the 15 that went into Iran. So when we land there, I tell you what, everything I was told about Iranians mm-hmm. was not what I thought.
Really?
They were the kindest, most generous people I've ever met mm-hmm. anywhere.
Wow.
When we finally got to the location where the damage was, we had a schoolyard place where we're going to set up our tents and live in the tents. They wouldn't let us set up our tents. They felt so bad that we left our Christian holiday, Christmas, to come help them. And remember, they're Muslim.
Yeah, yeah.
That they made us a Christmas tree. It was ugly.
Oh, really?
It looked like Charlie Brown Christmas. But it was the best they could do.
Sure.
They made us presents. They gave us roses. They were just very grateful that we wow. came to help them.
Well,
that is not what you would think.
No, it isn't. And it's not the rhetoric that you normally hear. That's an amazing story. That's really good.
And we were the first Americans there since the Iranian hostage crisis.
Sure. Yeah.
If you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
I do. So we were the first Americans, and we got American flags on our back. Mm-hmm. And the Iranians see us walking down the streets. They're like, they could not believe there were Americans walking down their streets. And we would see some Iranians like wearing Dallas Cowboys jackets or Washington uh-huh. Redskins shirts, and they love American sports. Yeah. They're just very friendly people.
Well, and that's what I've understood. I mean, I've understood that a lot of that rhetoric, it just really is associated with the leaders, but the people of Iran actually, they kind of like the West, and they kind of idolize what's going on as far as our popular culture and stuff is concerned.
Yeah, actually, and they reiterated that all the time. They're told a lot of things that are not true, like we still have apartheid going on. And
oh, really?
They're just at that. But they get IP addresses, and they write them on the walls to get around the firewalls from the government to sure. get on the internet.
Yeah.
So they sneak on in. And so they would sit me down on the grass and say, so how many cars do you own? How many? We love sports. We have 3 sports stations. How many do you have? That was their whole city's like decimated, but it was their chance to find out from an outsider what's it really like to be in America.
What the truth was. Wow, that's pretty awesome. Well, it's good to hear too. I mean, it's really nice to know that, you know, when it's all said and done, the people, just the people, forget about the governments, but the people, you know, we're kind of all the same in a way. So that's good to hear.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you just a little bit. You said you've responded to like the Oklahoma City bombing and then the Pentagon on 9/11. What was it like responding mm-hmm. to those terrorist attacks? I mean, one was domestic and the other one was foreign. I mean, you know, there was a difference there. And of course, the Oklahoma City was mostly children.
Yeah. And this is getting back to where there's 28 teams under the FEMA. Mm-hmm. So it's the same kind of team. There's just 28 of them scattered across the United States. And so that was basically the real first deployment for these FEMA urban search and rescue teams.
Oh, okay.
So it was my first deployment. So a lot of us remember the images on TV. Mm-hmm. You see this building with a big cutout in it, smoke, and you know all the images of that. And so I got the phone call saying, we're going down mm-hmm. to help. So I pack all my stuff and we go down there. And it didn't really hit me till we got there and we're walking down the street towards the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. And then you come around the corner, and that image that you remember of the blown outside?
Yes.
So as you come around the corner, I can't remember the name of the streets, but you come around the corner, and when you see it in person, that was surreal. Hmm. And the amount of damage that was everywhere forward from there, because it also hurt, I think, 300 other buildings from the shockwave.
Wow.
It was – and a lot of people don't talk about that, and yeah. it's – it was just unbelievable. Wow. I have never seen anything like that anywhere. And being my first deployment to a major disaster, that was, And we had people quit our team back then because they couldn't handle what we saw and what we did. Mm-hmm. And they just said, this is not what I signed up for. You know, it was pretty brutal.
I bet. And how did you handle it?
I wasn't really part of, well, a lot of it was recovery operations. We're just going floor by floor, all the concrete slabs. We knew what floor we were operating on by the color of the carpet on the concrete. So we knew about where people were that were missing, where they were located in the building. So we just, you know, dug through. And you're literally down there with buckets and finding human remains and trying to do any identification for the families and whatnot. And at the same time, the federal agencies were there to look for any evidence as well, even right. though they pretty much knew who did it early on, very early on. Mm-hmm. They were still looking for anything. Plus, there were a lot of evidence files there from cases that were in the building, and every federal agency was located in this one building. It's not like up here in the Washington, D.C. or where we have different buildings for everybody. In there,
right.
all of them were one building.
Yeah.
So, and then our team came across the daycare center, which a lot of people have heard about.
Yeah.
We were working the night shift, and when you finally get to that level and you're finding the toys and, you know, the crushed, you know, it was just, that's where it really hurt a lot of our people mentally. You know, it's just, you know, really stressful if you've never seen anything like that ever, you know?
I'm sure. So, and you responded to the Pentagon on 9/11 as well?
Yeah, that happened to be right down the street from us. Oh. We were actually, I happened to be working that day in the fire station I was assigned to, Fire Station 18 in Falls Church, Long Route 50, which takes you right to the Pentagon. We just came back from an auto accident call on the Capitol Beltway. Oh. And I came in the kitchen and I see the TV. It was still on, you know, from the morning from us drinking coffee. And I saw there was a fire in the building. I'm like, well, that's kind of odd. You know, a lot of people had that same image. And then we saw the plane hit.
Yeah.
We actually but this fire station actually housed all of the equipment for this rescue team that I've been talking about. Mm-hmm. So we decided we got the word that we can go out of service and we're going to start putting our stuff together to go to New York. So as we're doing that, the Pentagon occurred and we had our radios on because they're right down the street. And then they were asking for us to come help them. So we ended up diverting to go into the Pentagon instead.
Wow. And what was it like walking up to the Pentagon and seeing, you know, basically a hole blown into the side of that building?
Yeah. When we arrived there, I mean, we also had fire department units that responded right after it occurred. Mm-hmm. But when we came in with rescue teams afterwards, it was a couple hours later. When we arrived, the FBI and other agencies were picking up evidence off the grass, and we couldn't set up our tents until they got all the debris from the airplane off the grass and picked up whatever they need to. That side of the Pentagon had just been renovated. Mm-hmm. So it actually had not been fully occupied by everybody, and there was still a construction trailer sitting there. So when we arrive, we're working off the hood of a car. We're trying to plan, all right, we're going to go in there and we're going to search all these rooms, all these offices. And I do remember this one guy with a construction helmet came up to me and said, hey, if somebody will escort me down to that construction trailer, I'll get you the blueprints to the Pentagon. Well, what are the odds that somebody would ever have the blueprints to the Pentagon?
Yeah.
No doubt. So we were able to get that. And then, I mean, there were areas that were shaded out that they don't want you to know what's there.
Sure,
but
sure.
We were able to use that to figure out where the offices were. So as we do our searches, we can check them off and mark out, you know, so we're not duplicating efforts. It's a process that we go through, whether it's a hurricane, earthquake, whatever. We do grid searches and whatnot. So having that and knowing where all the offices are, that we could go through and do what we need to do in a systematic manner and do it quickly.
Wow. So, you know, I'm looking at this list that you sent of all of the things that you've responded to in one facet or another, whether it be earthquakes or terrorist bombings or hurricanes and such. And I'm thinking, I mean, what kind of mental toll does that stuff take on you? I mean, you're already a firefighter and a paramedic, so you're responding to some pretty horrific, you know, car accidents and things like that you've already talked about. But then on top of that, you're responding to these kind of things. How did you deal with that mentally?
I will tell you, it does get rough. And remember, this is on top of everything we do on a local right. basis. We have, I was a medic as well as a firefighter. We're a combination department. So we don't have like private ambulances that come with us. We do everything.
Sure.
So you have kids dying in your arms and you're trying to save them on the local level. Then all of a sudden you're sitting at a Data Katrina searching, you know, looking for people in houses or in debris fields in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And you remember some of the things I remember is the smell. Whenever you go to Oklahoma City was the first time where you could just smell death. Mm-hmm. There, it's an odor you'd never, ever forget.
Yeah.
And I've always smelt it on, you know, a local call where somebody hasn't picked up their newspapers in a week or two and someone had deceased because of age, natural causes. And, you know, there's just an odor. But when you get to a disaster, when you have numerous victims involved, there's just that smell. You just never forget it. So especially Katrina, when we were assigned initially to Jackson, Mississippi, that tidal surge that came in, I think it was like 30, 40 feet high, mm-hmm. going through Gulfport and all that. So Interstate 10 runs along the bottom of Mississippi, along that whole south.
Right.
The debris field of all the houses, the trees, the cars, everything is on the other side of Interstate 10, or was.
Yeah.
And just being outside, you can just smell it. Hmm. So you know there's people, the victims that had perished, that are in that debris field somewhere. But you can just smell it. It's just everywhere. And it's those kind of things and the images. And then going back to Oklahoma City, that was a very stressful situation mentally, because normally we like to get away from the incident so you can give your mind some time to clear out and everything. But Oklahoma City, where we were living, it was in a civic center. I can't remember what it was called, but it was Civic Center. And they allowed all the families of the victims to come in. And they're wearing pictures and buttons on their shirts. And they're serving us. And it was something to help them.
Yeah.
But what ended up happening is, because now we're being watched 24/7, you can't get away from it at all. So that mentally is not good. I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of our people just said, I can't deal with this. You do need that time to get away from the incident and try and get your rest. It's pretty serious. Matter of fact, I worked with the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, and we did a whole podcast series. It's mainly geared for the first responders about mental health. Mm-hmm. And that has become a very, very strong thing that every department, police, fire, nurses, you know, a lot of careers where, you know, it's now we're trying to get the word out that it's okay to say you need help.
Yeah.
We have had a lot of suicides that don't go reported. So take, for instance, Facebook. So you see someone died, but they don't say what happened.
Right.
It's like all of a sudden, you probably had friends where that happens, that somebody posts, but nobody wants to talk about it.
Right.
Exactly. You know, it's a taboo, you know, and that happens a lot in public safety. And we really do need to talk about that.
Yeah.
And it's okay to get help. And PTSD is very, very real.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I have a friend who just became a local police officer about 2 years ago now. And he's confided in me already that he has to watch himself really closely, because he finds himself getting, you know, at the very least, really jaded towards people in general, because he just sees the cesspool of life, you know, in the calls that he has to deal with and whatnot. And he just finds himself getting angry and upset over little things if he's not careful. And he really has to watch himself as far as that's concerned. And he's only been a cop for just a couple of years.
I have a lot of empathy for the law enforcement, because they end up seeing all the bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're always going after bad guys. They're not getting any, they don't get to have the nicer calls that, that the firefighters do. So we have this little thing. We go back and forth and they, you know, they don't like that we're always called the heroes and they're always the bad guys. But, you know, I do have empathy because you're right. They're always finding the bad guys, the speeder, the person breaking in, or the drunks that are arguing, or the wife that's gotten beaten. You know, they're getting all that, where we get to go help a little kid or something, or, we don't have what they have. They're 100% all the bad guys.
Yeah.
Us, you know, a lot of our calls are, you know, they're not serious medical calls, and you can have fun with the family, and, you know, it's a broken ankle or something like that. And, you know, it's a different, wholly, you know, totally different situation.
Right.
That, I do empathize with them, though.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, I'm looking at this and I'm seeing the years, and it looks like you were part of this this response team for about 20 years or so. Is that correct?
Yeah, from when I helped start it. Uh-huh. I just, like I said, be in the right place, right time. My battalion chief was one of the people that helped start the program.
Oh, okay.
And he stopped by the fire station where I was. I was one of the few firefighters who knew how to use a computer.
Oh, okay.
That's how I got on.
Yeah.
I've been on the internet since like 83.
Oh, wow.
This is going back to CompuServe days.
Yeah.
You're probably too young to remember that kind of stuff.
You know, I would have been about 8 or 9 years old in 83, but I'm old enough. I can remember some of it. Yeah.
I had email, but there was nobody to email because nobody had it yet.
Yeah.
You had to dial up and all that stuff.
Well, you know, we still had that when I was in college in the early 90s. We didn't have any of this fancy internet stuff. It was all news groups AOL. And all that kind of stuff. AOL,
Genie, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
So I kind of grew up with computers. I was building them back in the 80s and selling them, you know, reselling them.
Mm-hmm.
But I was one of the few that actually knew what to do with these. So he came by and had me create some forms and paper, you know, things that we would end up using later on down the road. And so I was doing a lot of the IT stuff in the early 90s. This is like 90, like 89, 90.
Mm-hmm. So
you're, yeah, so that's how I was able to get on with my geek.
there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're still dealing with like 14K internet speeds and all that kind of stuff back then, probably.
Oh, you're being generous. Yeah. 2800.
No, 2800. Yeah. Why? Yeah, that's low. So, you know, you had a bunch of people you said that would just like said, I'm done with this. How many people do you think kind of came and went and they just couldn't handle the, you know, just that mental pressure of being involved in something like that would be?
I don't know. I mean, it was mainly the very first one, the Oklahoma City bombing, because that was
a tough one.
You know, to this day, when I look back, that was probably still one of the more memorable. I'm not sure what the word would be, but the one that still comes back to my mind. I don't know if it's because it's the first one or that it was one of our people doing it to our own.
Yeah.
Or the kids or the families. It was and it was Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
You know, it's middle America.
Right in the center,
people
yeah.
there are just yep. so nice. So I mean, so many different factors. And it was the first exposure to something so big. I mean, it was huge. It wasn't just one building. It was 300 of them. So from that, we lost a few. But then after that, we really started being careful about who would come on. And we would actually, as people were coming onto the team, we'd actually bring the families, the wives, girlfriends, husbands, and just tell them this is what it's going to be like. You know, your husband, wife will be away for 10 days. You're not going to be able to talk to them. You need to mow the grass. You're going to have to do everything. You have to pay the bills because their support system is now gone. And they're going into, you know, we're going into a place that we probably shouldn't be, you know, while no one has ever been killed, it's not safe.
Right.
I mean, you're going into a disaster zones, you know, overseas, you're going into areas that, you know, but luckily, I don't know how, but, we've never lost anybody, just minor injuries. And, we've done a lot of good and under the name of the United States and the people overseas really do appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's got to be people like you that run towards those problems and not away from them. So, you know, thank you for doing that.
I appreciate it. I'm humbled by that. Yeah. But, you know, it was a weird thing getting in the fire department. And fire department people who want to get in the fire department, they don't realize there's so many things you can do. You can be a paramedic, you do hazardous materials. They have a thing called technical rescue, where you do rope rescues down cliffs, or water rescues, and fire investigations. I mean, there's so many things. If you're tired of one thing, you just jump over and get a certification and do something else.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's an amazing career.
Yeah.
You know, amazing career.
So now, are you still working in that field, or are you retired now, or what?
I am retired. Mm-hmm. And I actually retired a little bit early because my father came down with ALS.
Oh,
and he was my hero. So I pretty much gave up everything that I did, everything online. I used to do streaming and, you know, things just to give my mind something to do. And I gave all my efforts to him. I kept driving down to Nashville back and forth and building his wheelchair ramps and visiting with him. And I was the oldest. I have two brothers and a sister. They all live in Nashville as well. But, you know, I'm the oldest and he was my, you know, my hero. So I kept going back and taking care of him. And then he passed away. Mm-hmm. He literally choked to death. He had the kind of ALS that affects your throat.
Mm-hmm.
So literally the muscles just contract. And it would happen a lot. And usually it would release every 30, you know, after 30 seconds. But eventually one time it did not. And mm-hmm. he literally choked to death. And he was fully aware of it. And, you know, it's pretty ugly, ugly.
Wow.
So once that was over, I admittedly was depressed because I'd given up everything. He was gone. And then my now daughter-in-law works for a large hotel chain, and their headquarters happens to be here in Maryland. And she said, well, have you ever done fire inspections before? I'm like, well, yeah. So she took my resume and I waited in line for my turn. And now I work and do fire inspections over North America and the Caribbean and Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that, and I do like working. I enjoy working. That probably came from my dad.
Sure.
And plus, I don't know, now that I've thought about it, I think I just stay busy just to give my mind something to do, so I don't remember all the things. Because I do, when I look at a list like you have of everything I've done, and that doesn't include all the other incidents that I've been exposed to on the local level.
Right.
It's like, wow, you look back and like, how am I not going completely out of my mind based on what my brain has been exposed to?
Yeah.
A lot more than I should have.
Yeah.
And, you know, and a lot. And during that career, back then, they weren't really concerned about mental health. You just had to suck it up, you know, suck it up, buttercup. And you were deemed as being weak if you said anything. So you just move on. That's just how it worked.
Sure.
So. And now it's a whole different animal now, and now they really do try and work hard on the mental health.
That's good. That's good to hear that we've kind of maybe turned that corner and maybe tried to stop being so macho as far as those things are concerned. Well,
I think I do try and stay busy so I don't think about everything that I've done in the past.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, I mean, if you do, I mean, there's got to be some PTSD there, even in you, and you keep your mind busy, you don't think about those kind of things. So, you know, there's benefits of staying busy for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Plus, I just love working. It's fun.
Well, good. Well, you also have a podcast, right? Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
All right. So, within our firefighters, again, we have a firefighters union, a great one, mm-hmm. and many years ago, we started helping our fire, even though they have a pension. We help our firefighters and their families learn about how to prepare for retirement.
Mm-hmm.
That way they're not getting, you know, I'm not going to say ripped off or anything, but skewed a different way by financial advisors or whatever, you know, or salespeople.
Sure.
So we would do our own, weekends where we bring in the spouses and the firefighters, and we'd have speakers from Social Security Administration and these different things, or realtors, and explain how to retire, how you do this, how you do that, how you make a will. All that sort of thing. And so by my work within that union, we created a Facebook group just for the firefighters.
Hmm.
And we've been running that for years. So we can keep them up to date on how to work their 457, which is a government version of 401k.
Okay.
The funds to pick to get the best performance. We've been doing that for years. Well, once I retired and I get exposed to these other coworkers I'm around, I realized a lot of them have no idea what they're doing with their 401ks or they're buying whole life insurance and, you know, people want to debate me on all that, but all these things, they just don't know where they're buying and they're just paying for it because someone told them to do it. They were talked into it. So this is basic financial literacy is what we're doing. And I know there's a lot of other podcasts like that, like Mr. Mustache and Money Mustache and, you know, a lot of these, but we started doing this podcast and my co-host is a good friend of mine. She's down in Florida. She's a military wife and her husband's stationed down there. And the topic came up. I said, yeah, I want to do this podcast because so many people, you know, want me to tell them how to do all this, but I feel more comfortable having a co-host. She goes, well, I don't even know what a podcast is. She literally said that. So I said, well, you just connect on Skype and I'll send you a microphone and we'll just talk about these things. And she happens to be a lawyer and a real estate agent. Uh-huh. I said, this is going to be great. If I can have you as a lawyer, real estate agent to keep me in line and to tell me some of the legal stuff based on what I'm saying, I said, that's a perfect matchup.
Yeah.
So, so once we did episode one, I'm like, all right, this girl knows how to talk. She's good. And we already interact great anyway. So, we're getting better and better. We're up to 30 episodes and, we're getting thousands of listeners per episode now. So we're doing well and we don't charge for anything. So we have a lot of people coming in the Facebook group. We're trying to educate them on basic financial literacy, you know, which should already be in schools.
Sure.
You know, we got to get that back in there. But we're at least if they talk to a financial advisor, they have some knowledge.
Right.
So they know they're not getting ripped off or steered into funds they shouldn't be getting into. Yeah.
Well, and it's amazing, like you said, a lot of this stuff isn't even taught in school anymore. I mean, I graduated from high school in 1992, but we were still, you know, in our economics course in high school. I mean, they were still teaching us the basic stuff. They taught us how to do a check ledger and, we didn't have debit cards back then really very much. But they don't do that anymore at all. My kids are going through high school right now and they don't – I mean, they're not being taught how to, you know, do their bank account and make sure that it equals out and they've got enough money to pay the next bill. And just because they've got $5 doesn't mean they have $5 because they've got to think about the bill that's coming out tomorrow, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And just the simple thing of trying to explain to all these adults what an S&P 500 is.
Sure. Yeah.
And just saying, and I make them listen to about Warren Buffett and Vogel and the people that created this thing and say, no, this is America's top 500 companies.
Yeah.
And then I try and bring it down to them. I said, well, you've heard of Amazon. You've heard of Apple. These are at the top. This is what you're buying.
Yeah.
So, and because right now, as we're recording this, let's be open. It's March 2020, the long tail. Mm-hmm. But we're going through a coronavirus situation where the market went down. And I actually get emails from people saying they're worried about their mutual fund going to zero. I'm like, no. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
You're basically saying, you know, ask your kid what Fallout is, the video game. That's what you're saying. It would be post-apocalyptic.
Yeah. It would make 1929 look
going away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So just trying to get, and then they said, no one's ever explained this to me. I know we're trying to dumb this down and relate everyday products like Johnson & Johnson. The baby powder, that's actually a very high rated company that you could buy if you wanted. But, you know, we're trying to steer people into just doing index funds, core and explorer thing. Just have this. And then as you learn, if you want to start dabbling in other things, that's fine.
Yeah.
But we try and teach them the smart way to invest with the best shot at getting to retirement.
Well, it's good. It sounds like a fantastic podcast. We'll make sure we put a link to that in the show notes and then a link to your Facebook page as well in there. So I
really appreciate that.
Yeah, you bet. I had a chance to listen, like I said, to your most recent podcast today, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Not only was the information really good, but the quality was fantastic as well. I think you guys are doing a great job.
Well, if we're going to pat each other on the back, let me tell you something about you. I've been listening to some of your podcasts before I did this. Uh-huh. And you're great with your interviews. And I love that you're doing this whole series of Everybody Has a Story. And it's just a great series. I hope you keep doing this. It is amazing what you're doing.
Well, thank you very much. I truly appreciate those kind words. So I'd like to end my podcast asking a couple of kind of flippant questions, kind of dumb questions. Are you up to the task of answering a couple of them?
Here we go. Go ahead.
Okay.
Give me a shot.
All right. So, okay. First question is, I've been asking the same questions now for probably about 3 or 4 months. So if you've listened to the whole podcast, you've probably heard them. So they shouldn't be a surprise. Okay. You've had a chance to prepare. I'm warning you. Okay. Okay. First question is, who is your favorite superhero?
Oh, man. Spider-Man.
And why is that?
Because as growing up, he was the one I watched on TV all the time.
Yeah.
It was one of the, I think it was the only one that was on at that time. I think there was Batman, but no, Spider-Man was just one of my favorites I grew up with in the 60s.
Yeah. When I was a kid, we had, we had Wonder Woman and we had Incredible Hulk. Those are like the two shows that were on TV when I was a kid. And I loved both of those very much.
Yeah. But see, you're talking about the live action ones. Yeah, I'm talking about the cartoons.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, we all love, matter of fact, here's a little trivia.
Cartoons. What's that? Kids don't even know what Saturday morning cartoons are these days.
Linda Carter, who was Wonder Woman that you saw, she lives in Fairfax County where I was a firefighter and I ran into her several times.
Oh, yeah? Wow.
She lives in Northern Virginia in a big mansion.
Yeah.
And she every now and then you'll see her at a store or something like that. And she's a great, and she's a Capitals fan.
Oh, so okay. All right. I was going to ask, is she nice? Is she?
She is an amazing woman. Oh, no, that's she's good. So kind.
That's good to hear.
She doesn't brush you off if you want to take a picture. No, she's great.
That's very good. That's good to hear. Okay. Your favorite band or musician currently?
Oh, toss up. People are going to get a little critical of me. Def Leppard or Boston?
Why would they be critical of that?
I don't know. You know, some people are going to have to Google it. Like, what is he talking about? Def Leppard.
Hey, I played Pour Some Sugar on Me air guitar in my bedroom back in the day. See? Just saying. So,
you're good, man.
Let's see. Okay. So the next two couple of questions are maybe a little bit more serious. First one then is, what's your favorite quote?
Oof. Favorite quote. Oh, this is one I think that's currently on my Facebook profile. Mm-hmm. The scars remind us that the past is real.
Hmm. Okay. Explain that one to me a little bit.
It's a quote from a song by, who's that? The song is called Scars.
Okay. Oh, I don't know. Is that a current song?
Papa Roach.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've heard that song. Mm-hmm.
So if you think about my background, the scars, I guess, would be in my head. I remember every kid that died in my arms and stuff like that. So scars remind us that the past is real. So
that's good. Okay. And the last question is,
I realized it was pretty deep for the end of a podcast. But.
Hey, well, I've got one more that might be a little deeper. Who knows? What is the favorite, your most favorite piece of advice that you've ever been given?
Oof, that's a good one. I have a lot of advice in my head.
Yeah.
I think especially current day, especially with mutual funds dropping during this coronavirus, no matter when people listen to this, because I was around during 2008 when that money dropped back then too.
This is
like the same thing to me.
Mm-hmm.
I learned back then, I didn't touch my money then. And I remembered what Warren Buffett and all these guys said about now. And to this point, weeks into the coronavirus, I have not touched my 401k. Yeah. Everything's still where it's at because I'm not going to make that rookie mistake. So I don't know what the advice is, but the advice is when the markets go down, don't touch it. Okay. Leave it alone.
No, that's fair enough. That's good. Well, and it's true. Like you said, I mean, if you look, I don't know a lot about the stock market, but I do know if you look at the history of the stock market, the curve always tends up. I mean, there's dips and bumps, but the curve always tends up and it always has.
Especially with the coronavirus, this is not a market issue. It's not a financial crisis like in 2008.
Right.
This is a biological event that will go away.
Yeah, it's a hiccup.
As the day that we're recording this, not a single new case has shown up in China. So we know the end is coming.
Sure. Yeah.
The good end, not the end. I mean, the window. The end of the tunnel is coming.
Right.
So it's a temporary pause of how great everything was.
Yeah.
So it's a completely different situation. But no matter how far it was going down, I was not going to touch it.
Yeah. Very good. Well, that's some good words to end on. Craig, I am honored and privileged that you were willing to spend the last hour with me. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
I appreciate your time and sharing my story, and you do a great job. I appreciate you.
Craig Lukey on Everyone Has a Story. Thank you so much, Craig, for calling into the dungeon and spending a little time with us here. We truly appreciate the story that you sent, and God bless you for everything that you've done, and truly appreciate your service as a firefighter to this country. It's definitely a blessing for us. And if you want to find out a little bit more about Craig's podcast, you can find it. It's called Rock on the Money. He is a certified Dave Ramsey Master Financial Coach, and he provides a well-rounded coaching and teaching experience, helps you to save and invest and protect. And so find his podcast anywhere you find your podcast. We'll have a link to it here in the show notes, but you can find it on iTunes, Spotify, any of those places like that. It is a great, great podcast, and I highly, highly recommend it. It is, not only is it's great to learn about financial stuff, it's just entertaining. Craig's a fun guy to listen to. This past week, he actually had a lady on there talking about how to sell stuff on eBay. Look, eBay is still a thing, and eBay is still around, and you can still make a lot of money on eBay. So check out that podcast and find out a little bit more information about how to do that. And subscribe to Rock on the Money, Craig Lukey's podcast. Thank you so much for joining us here on Everyone Has a Story. Truly appreciate it. If you or anybody you know would like to share their story here on our podcast, we'd love to have it. We don't exist unless we have people like you that are willing to share your story. You can reach out to me. You can find me at KNAT Radio on Twitter. That's KNATRADIO. You can also find me at KNATRadio@gmail.com. That's KNATRadio@gmail.com. Find me on Facebook at Everybody Has a Story. That is Instagram and Facebook as well. I am available at many of those places. You can also find me on the Indie Blast Podcast Network. You can reach out to me there. Just send a contact and say, I want to talk to Nate at the Everyone Has a Story podcast, and we'll make sure that I see that email. So thanks so much again. We truly appreciate it. Hope you guys are staying safe during this lockdown time frame, obeying the rules, practicing safe distancing, all that kind of stuff. If you're annoyed that we're still under lockdown, go, if you want to go out, at least be safe. Think about other people around you, right? I mean, if you think your freedoms are being treaded on, that's one thing, but be safe and think about the other people that may not be so lucky to have such a healthy immune system as you do. Look forward to speaking to you next week. Until then, this is Nate Wade saying, have a great day.
Indie Blast Podcast Network.